Hi, I'm Lisa Smith Henderson, the host for Lili Logic. Lili was my childhood nickname. Lili is also my grandmother name. And Lili kind of sums up like the real me. In other words, taking off the masks here. And we're just going to have fun on Lili Logic because sometimes the logic is a little bit twisted. I am delighted to welcome back for our podcast today, Byron Fogan. Now, Byron was a guest on the previous episode, and today we're going to talk about dating and recovery. And we're going to do a little bit deeper dive. We're going to go into what are some red flags that Byron would look for in a relationship? And also, how do you know if you're attracting somebody that's as healthy as you or at the same level psychologically as you are? So let me just tell you a little bit about Byron. Fascinating guy. He's a recovering alcoholic and gambler. He's got 11 years in sobriety. He does speaking on this topic. He also does public health, community-based harm reduction work. And really, a lot of his life and business is about recovery. Byron has a degree in international relations from Georgetown University and also has a law degree from Albany Law School, which is not in Georgia, friends. It's in upstate New York. And Byron is, if you look him up, Byron Fogan, he is pretty much an open book in many ways, but he has a fascinating story. So let's get started. Byron, what kind of red flags do you look for if you're dating?
So the biggest one, and it also intertwines in with my recovery, because it is the reason why I will stop speaking to someone. And it has to do with my past, right? I had my recovery journey includes a pretty public fall. I was, practicing attorney, and I committed a fairly major financial crime, and also had these other kind of reputation issues that followed me into recovery. Or pushed me into recovery, whatever the case may be. A lot of these issues are from 15, 20 years in my past, but they're present, right? You Google me, you can find them. They're right up front. I wish that I made the Washington Post for better reasons, right? But I didn't. I made the news for the reasons I made the news. And one of the things that I find is that when I meet new people, to the extent I meet new people, is that there's a lot of people that want to appropriate that story for themselves, right? They want to make that part, my past, part of our present. And I can't tell you how many times I've sat across the table from somebody I met on a first date, and all they wanted to talk about was my past. That's it. As though I had done something to them. And I do not allow for that. I allow for the discussion, right? The discussion is a perfectly valid thing. I do not allow people to appropriate the pain that I put some other people through for themselves, right? And I don't allow them to talk to me as though I caused them hurt when I don't even know them. That's my big red flag, right? The big red flag is if you want to appropriate somebody else's pain, if my ex-wife wants to sit across the table from me and talk about our past, while she won't do it, I don't think, she has a complete valid right to that, right? That is fair use of that information. But I do not allow people to unfairly use my past against me in my current relationships, particularly if they weren't there and they were never subject to it. They will never meet the drinking Byron, right? They'll never meet the Byron that committed a financial crime. They'll never meet the Byron that even practices law, because I don't practice law anymore. Yeah, that's the quickest way for me to, call for the check and end the date. How about you?
Well, and I think you are in a different position. For one thing, you're very upfront, and you're right. Mm-hmm. You have an unusual last name, so you get Googled and there you go.
Right.
It's like, yeah. And if somebody wants to latch onto that, oh God, that's a whole nother thing. For me now, this is a new red flag.
Okay.
Someone who talks poorly about their exes. And when I say poorly, I mean, she was psycho, she was crazy, she mm-hmm. was in drugs, whatever it is, I realize now, I'm going to end up in that batch.
Mm-hmm.
So now that is a giant, giant red flag. Whereas before, I was really trying to be like, oh, poor, and this is what it was designed to do. Oh, poor thing.
Yes.
And then, the love addict part of me is like, I'm different. I am not going to be a psycho bitch, crazy woman. And let me just show you how perfect I am. So for me, that is a big red flag. And my other red flag is just for me, is somebody I have no chemistry with. And there are different takes on this in the addiction and recovery communities. One is you feel that juice, you run.
Yes.
Like, no, I don't think so, because you're either attracted to someone or you're not attracted to them.
Right.
I have never had the experience of growing into that. I spent 12 years of my marriage trying,
Right.
and it didn't happen. So if that spark isn't there, I don't think it's going to be there. So for me, that's a red flag. It's like if I meet you and there's no juice, like, great, I might want to be your friend.
Right.
And that's not really a red flag as in something they've done wrong. It's like, for me, I'm not going to waste my time or theirs.
I think you bring up a great point because red flags don't necessarily mean that it's something that they've done. A red flag is just a signal to you that you're not in the right place, right? You have to look at the chemistry. I think you're absolutely right. You have to look at the chemistry as part of that equation. I know for me, one of the things that it took me a really long time to come to was like what I like. And I'm not going to be purposely provocative in this conversation, but I also had to come to terms with what I like and seek someone who would like those same things, right? Like, and so a red flag would be for me is if I, to your point, like there is no chemistry, there's no kind of passion, I don't see an opportunity where I could ask for the things that I want in a relationship and that she could reciprocate or that she could ask me the same thing, right? Like that we would be so unmatched in that area of our life that it wouldn't make sense that we're just setting ourselves up for resentment. So I like the way you approach the red flag. Like that, I think that's really important. I had a therapist once tell me to the point that you made, which was like, if it feels familiar, run, right? Run. And I'm like, okay, there's some truth to that. But I had to ask the next question, which was, is there a way for me to avoid that? Like, is there a conversation that I can have? Or can I start the process of being able to be the type of man that can ask for his wants and needs to be met, right? And be able to be the type of man that also can hear someone express their wants and needs and meet them there. So that I don't have to run from the passion, but I can run towards it with a set of questions and prepare to respond to theirs, right? How
Okay, so
long do you think it takes for you to see those red flags?
I mean, I can usually see him like right off the bat.
Mm.
And that comes from, years of being around people, trusting my intuition. And I'm also like one of these, I am not a window shopper. I don't browse. I go in, I see something, I say, how much does it cost? And sometimes I don't say that. I want it. And I've done that with men too, which has, it's actually panned out kind of well in a way, in some circumstances. It made me predatory in my, when I was using, like, I want and discard. I want you, discard. And for a number of reasons. But I think if you pay attention, like I get torn between I want to be open-minded and what can I really tolerate it? Online dating has been a really, it's been such a trip. I can't even tell you. It has been one of the best things I've ever done because it got my feet wet and kind of, I mean, I've been married for 20 years and my husband up and died young. And I was like, oh my God, now I'm not just a widow, I'm single. So it was good. But one guy said, I'm 6'3 without heels. I think I know what that means, but I'm not going to be naive. And he said, did you understand what I meant? And I said, yeah. And then I realized, like, I'm sorry, I'm not, I just no can do. I mean, it's just that it's that's not for me. And somebody else, maybe A-okay. But okay, well, for me, that's enough of a red flag that I probably shouldn't have even gone on the first date. But I was intrigued. I mean,
Right.
I was, how relaxed can I be with my choices?
Yeah, I think our experiences are different from that standpoint. I mean, I was released out into the wild for a long time, right? I've been single much longer during my adult life than I've been married, even though I was married twice. And, unfortunately, I conducted myself as a single man even during my marriage, unfortunately, from time to time. There used to be a time where I wanted to put my hand over the flame and see how much I could tolerate, right? Like, does this work for me? Oh, okay. I want to push my. I'm not there right now. I'm not there today. I don't know that I'll ever return to that. Maybe I will. It's funny. One of my other big red flags is like, be single, right? Like, I find myself at this age, maybe it's just a happenstance or a coincidence. I find myself in circumstances with people who aren't available, right? They're not emotionally available for a variety of reasons. And I'm friends with lots of married women, but it's hard when you become the confidant of somebody during their during their separation or during whatever process they're in their marriage. And then that tries to become a romantic thing that used to be very attractive to me back in, particularly in my drinking days, but even in my early recovery, where it was like, oh, she's picking me versus someone else, right? Today, that is not attractive at all. It's like there's no way that God's going to bring me somebody else's wife and this is my soulmate. There's no way. There's no space. There's no room for me. There's no room for me to ask for the things that I want to ask for in a relationship or to be able to deliver the things that I want to deliver in a relationship. So I've started to see that as a huge red flag too, which is a new epiphany, right? That woman belongs to someone else. She's not yours, right? And you
Red
have to
flag,
be
they're
gentle
married.
with that. What's
Yeah,
that?
I said a red flag, they're married, right?
Right, a red flag. They're married. They're dating. I've been separated for 3 years. Okay, you're married, right? Like just being able to change all of these kinds of maladaptive notions that I had so that I don't put myself in positions where with people who are emotionally unavailable for me.
Right.
It's a big
So
deal.
I
Go ahead.
know.
I'm sorry.
God, we've got so we could talk about this for a long, long time. But two things. One that I wanted to touch on is boundaries. And isn't that the key to getting what you want, getting what you need, avoiding enmeshment?
Yes. So the simple answer is absolutely yes. The difficulty is learning how to set those boundaries, right? And not outsourcing that work to someone else. So I believe that I am in the process of learning how to establish boundaries under a description that's useful, right? So I try to work off the description of boundaries is the distance at which I can love you and I can allow you to love me. And I juxtapose that against brick walls, right? I don't want to build walls around myself. Walls are not a place upon which I can love you. They're going to protect me in the same way that boundaries do, except they don't allow for that chain exchange of love. I'm great at building walls. Wonderful. I can keep all the garbage out of my life instantly. No problem. I do not have a problem in that space. I do have a problem, and I am growing in my understanding and my ability to be able to build boundaries. That distance and that space at which I can love someone else and I can allow them to love me. And we can do it in a way that avoids all of those toxic things like enmeshment or like, codependency and all the rest of that. These are new muscles I'm exercising as well. And I like it. And it feels really, really good. And it allows for some great conversations that are harder than the conversations that I used to have in my dating life, to the extent I have them today. But yeah, boundaries are they're beautiful. And I always looked at them as something that was, aggressive towards me. But I'm starting to discover how beautiful those can be, how absolutely beautiful those can be. And I didn't have a lot of practice with them.
Well, me either. And I would get mad when people wouldn't have boundaries. And I remember my therapist saying a couple of years ago, she said, I said, I've got a resentment against this woman. And she said, so what boundary did you not put up? No, don't. It's on me. And it was because I didn't say this behavior is unacceptable. I don't like this. Please don't do this with me or to me. And I would get mad. And I remember feeling that way as a parent. Like, please, I would tell my children, I don't like to punish you. Do you understand how much I don't like this? And as adults, they've told me they thought I was just blowing smoke. And now they'll say, oh, mom, we realize you really didn't like it. And I was like, no, I just wanted you to do right so I didn't have to put up a boundary. And I still feel like that. Like, if I say, no, then don't keep coming at me and make me do it over and over. I just want somebody to understand, like right off the bat. And I know that's not realistic, and that's, and it also is a cop out on my part.
I can relate to that feeling. Like you just want somebody. I used to tell I had a girlfriend, a long-term girlfriend, and I used to be like, you don't have to lie to me. Just don't do things that would make you have to lie, right? Like, and it was like me begging for someone to be decent to me instead of me taking responsibility to say what I do and do not want, and demonstrating the capability to leave if things got too out of hand. So it was really outsourcing my own happiness, right? I'm outsourcing my happiness. I'm outsourcing my autonomy to someone else, which is a terribly unfair way. I come at it from a masculine perspective. It's a terribly unfair way for a man to treat a woman, right? Throw them up on a pedestal, make them be perfect, and they have to fear the fall. That's awful. It feels like it should be nice, right? That's very like Romeo and Juliet-ish, but it's terrible. It's a terrible place to put somebody in where they're just trying to live their life and just be human, and they're up on this pedestal waiting for the pedestal to crack because that's where I put them. I put them in the dangerous place of being on a pedestal. But I've really had to work on that issue and all of those issues. Like that was something that's kind of that's a daily grind that I go through, even though I don't date on a daily basis. That's a daily grind that I go through, even in meeting people, right? My new approach to people is not to put them on a pedestal so they can fall. It's to kind of accept them where they are.
Whoa, and that is a heavy growth trajectory.
It's been necessary though for me. I don't
Yeah.
know about you, but it was necessary for me.
I discovered it in my marriage, and it took me about 15 years of being married to say, oh, he's not that guy. He's going to show up, he's going to be present. In 20 years, he told me I was beautiful once. Once. And I was like, I'm not getting my needs met, and blah, blah, blah. And this is finally, I was like, he's not that guy. And can I accept him for who he is? And it was a very arduous, unpleasant process of like, am I going to stay? Am I going to go? And pros and cons and all that. But what I finally came to is, yeah, the pros outweigh the cons. And if I can accept this is who he is, I'm not being harmed. Does it give me what I want? No, but I can get that with girlfriends and friends and have my needs met other ways. He's never going to sit down and talk philosophy or politics or have an intellectual what if. I said to him way before he died, I was like, what do you think happens after you die? He was like, I don't know, I've never thought about it. And I was like, I've never met anybody. And I can talk about, because I would have said this right to his face too, like, I've never met anybody. You haven't thought about dying? I mean, geez, it's a miracle I'm alive. I'm sure it's a miracle you're alive. Of course, you've thought about dying.
Absolutely.
But yeah, that acceptance, radical acceptance. And responsibility. How am I responsible for my own happiness? If I want a girlfriend, I need to call a girlfriend. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk to you about is water seeks its own level. Do you think we are attracted to people that are emotionally at the same level we are, even though we may think we're like very healthy?
I do believe that the child inside us seeks other children to play with, right? And so if our child is not healed, they're going to seek other children, right? So if I internally, if I'm acting five and I'm taking my five-year-old out for a walk, right? My five-year-old is going to find a little five-year-old girl and wants to play with her, right? And what I mean by that is that I'm going to look for somebody equally wounded, or I'm going to look for somebody who is wounded similarly, right? And our little children, our little wounded children are going to play with one another. And that's what our relationship is going to look like. And that's not a great place to be, right? And so I agree that we do seek out people at our emotional level. But in my instance, that's a trauma response. And knowing that that's my trauma response today, I can do a little bit better job of like sitting the five-year-old in a corner and not taking him out with me on these walks when I go on a date, or on these walks when I'm going to look for somebody to go on a date with. I am very aware when I am walking my little five-year-old around and when my trauma is responding to somebody else's trauma. I can feel that immediately. The thing that I can't feel is when everything's okay. Am I seeking someone who's at my same emotional maturity, or am I blinded because she's cute, right? I haven't gotten to a place in my journey where I can immediately see that. I can see it later, but I can't see that on date one, date two, date three. Yeah, I'd love to hear your experience of that, because I know from a guy, like sometimes I see something and I don't give a damn why. It's I don't really 100% give a damn why I'm attracted to this person. Sometimes that's a secondary thought. So help me understand from the woman's perspective how that works out and plays out for you.
Well, and I don't know that I'm a great one to say, just because I do tend to assign magical qualities to people. And that's something I, in my addiction recovery from my love addiction, I have one bottom line, and that is I take responsibility for myself. Just not always an easy thing to do, but that is it. So if I'm looking to you to make me happy, then I'm off track. So I do kind of run things through that filter. But in retrospect, the person that I was dating that had all the psycho exes, there were some other red flags. But it was somebody I'd known for a long time, and I had ascribed a lot of magical qualities over a period of about 40 years. Right. So, and he was in recovery. So I thought, okay, well, therefore, we're on the same track. And now, looking back, I had exit points that I overrode because of the chemistry. So I'm definitely not there yet. It's like, if there's a lot of chemistry, I can overlook a lot of stuff. And so I can't, yeah. Do I get it on date one, two, or three? Probably. But do I file it in a, well, we'll look at that later because this is fun.
Right.
And I think there is a healthy little kids playing with each other, five-year-olds. Like, we've got a bowling thing this weekend. I'm so excited. A terrible bowler, but it makes me laugh. Like, I've never gone bowling without laughing. So that's a little kid part that's healthy. So it's like kind of teasing out what's trauma response, what's my addiction, what's my assigning magical qualities, and what I wish were there that's not really there.
Right.
So I got no good answer for you, Byron.
But I mean, that's a great answer. And I do think you're right. Like, there is something healthy about that. I'm really, really careful on who's leading when I'm on the walk with my 5-year-old, right? Because if my 5-year-old is leading the walk rather than me leading him. Now that's I'm about to walk into a bad circumstance because my 5-year-old makes 5-year-old decisions. And I guess the other thing that I've tried to do is really be very, very blunt and clear with myself about, like, hey, sir, I have to be careful about putting the cart before the horse. That's how I'm going to describe it. You have to get to know this person before you end up in a position where they're making you happy and you're going to ignore everything else that's happening. Because once I find myself in a position where someone is pleasing me in that way, all bets are off in my mind, like how my conduct and my behavior and what I want out of life. I had to start putting some distance and kind of flipping my own script on how I approach those things, right? Just putting some guardrails in my own mind, like, okay, hey, Byron, first date, you're going to go home and you're going to go home by yourself. Byron, second date, you're going to go home and you're going to go home by yourself. Like just putting some guardrails on that to give myself an opportunity to see those red flags or give myself an opportunity to develop some boundaries and to see how they develop theirs. Give myself an opportunity to see how this plays out, because I know in my own brain that if that's overcome early, I'm not going to care. No matter how much it's to my detriment, I'm simply not going to care. And I had to have a real hard conversation with myself about that issue and that process and how I attack that as this man running around free in the world, that I have to just be careful about that, that I have to find other ways to get to know someone. That's not the best way.
Oh, yeah. And to me, it's the easier, softer way. I mean, I had a dating plan and it was just that, you know, not disclosing too much. And it's a little different being in recovery, talking to somebody in recovery, because I will talk to you openly and mm-hmm. here. And I'm pretty open about my life in general, but I don't need to disclose certain things right off the bat. And
right.
For me, that's kind of learning those boundaries. And, but yeah, to me, I just want to jump to the part where, you know, I'm just going to say we're having sex all the time and right. we're madly in love and we're building the rest of our life and going to travel together. Right. That's where my brain goes. And mm-hmm. I have to work very hard to bring that adult part of me in to go, well, that's not today. That right. is not the reality of today. And yeah, you're right. You get dopamine, you get oxytocin, you get all those chemicals. And I don't think anybody thinks straight with all that.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree, but you know, I know that for me, that has been disastrous for me. That's been disastrous for me to the extent, and I don't believe I can control any of this stuff. I think that chemistry overrides lots of things. But to the extent that I can put some guardrails around that, like my life is happier. And it has been since I've started conducting myself that way. I can be very blunt and upfront with that. My life has improved greatly when I started putting some guardrails around how I approach that part of my life without judging it.
Right.
Because there was also a time where I put guardrails around it, but it was in self-judgment. It was in some very harsh self-judgment areas, right? Like, oh my God, you're this, you're a promiscuous, terrible man. Blah. I don't think that anymore at all about myself. I just simply put some guardrails around these things that will protect my little 5-year-old heart, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that is to me the perfect place to leave it, even though I've got 5 more questions, which we can save for another day.
Okay.
How does that sound?
Sounds wonderful. I've so enjoyed this conversation.
This has been really fun. Byron Vogan, thank you.
Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thanks for joining us today for Lee Logic. And you can visit us, leelogic.com. And to check out Byron's Instagram, you can go to @datdudebyron on Instagram. Have a great week and we'll see you next time.